The runner was young and athletic as he meandered through the forest and between the pines with the agility of a monkey. He was wearing a military poncho, black, with the hood covering most of his features. He leaped over downed trees and skirted thorny brambles, the man running from predators that were closing. Slung over his shoulder was a burlap sack that had been cinched by twine, the contents inside damning. A few hours ago, he had breached a mountain hideaway that was the fabled Vladorian Keep, a tower that was allegedly created from centuries-old bones. It was a reservation for the dead, a place of history. And its constituents were driven by their reverence to the remains that were kept inside of a bone sepulcher. The man continued his descent along the mountainside with his lung endurance high and that of a true competitor. His legs were fresh and well-developed, that of a marathoner, and as he descended the mountainside grade, he could sense his enemy closing from all points of the forest. From the north, the east, and the west, they were converging like a pack of wolves, though they remained unseen and soundless. Then there was a waspy hum as a bullet barely missed the man, the missing round clipping off the branch of a nearby tree. More rounds soon followed, with most either skipping off boulders or lodging in the tree trunks. The man ran, fell, rolled back onto his feet, and continued with his escape. Bullets continued to home in as dust and chips erupted along a nearby boulder from peppering gunshots. The impacts were caused by suppressed assault weapons, the measures taken meant to be silent and lethal. Then the operative felt the impact and sting of a bullet as it entered and exited through his shoulder, the pain subtle at first, then it gradually blossomed into white-hot agony. He gritted his teeth and staggered against the punch of the bullet, which knocked him off his gait. Then he went to a knee as he started to see the spiral of internal stars. Rising to solid footing, a second bullet smashed through his body, and then a third. The operative started to spasm as though receiving a high-end electric charge, his body dancing with chaotic rhythm. Then he fell to both knees as though in surrender and looked skyward. But the boughs of overhead pines were too thick, too robust, the sky nothing but tiny glimpses of blue between the needles. And then the burlap sack slipped from his grip and to the ground.
"My heavenly Father," he began,
his eyes still raised skyward. There was another impact as a round punched through his back, causing him to emit a stunning grunt. As the pain began to mercifully subside with an internal numbing, he raised his arms upward like a child who begged to be picked up by his parent. "My Father." And then his eyesight began to close in from the edges to pinch out the marginal light. First came tunnel vision, that tiny mote of reality that said you were still alive, until it finally winked off and faded away. As the man fell forward and his life gone, a dozen poncho-hooded figures emerged from the pines with their automatic weapons directed on the body. When they reached the downed operative, one of the shrouded figures set off a burst with peppering shots to the man's back, assuring his death. After peeling off the hood of his military poncho, the shooter reached down, grabbed the burlap sack, then handed it to an unarmed man. The man who accepted the sack did so with a hand that appeared thin, bony, and frail. His fingers looked excessively long, with his fingernails in need of trimming, the points too sharp. Yet they worked fine as he unraveled the tie that had bound the sack closed with adeptness. Opening the bag and looking at the contents within, the man with the long fingers reached inside, rummaged around, then he withdrew four computer hard drives that had been appropriated from the keep. Holding them up, he stated evenly,
"Return these to the keep."
He handed them to the shooter.
"See if they've been damaged or compromised in any way."
The shooter, while accepting them, bowed his head.
"Yes, Prime Chancellor."